Our culture is in a crisis, and the solution to that crisis is the gospel message. St. John's Seminary, the seminary of the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, offers an online MA in pastoral ministry degree for anyone interested in receiving formation for ministry. This program helps students improve their knowledge of the Catholic intellectual tradition and develop practical skills for ministry. A studio with professional video, audio, and lighting equipment allows our students to have an enjoyable technological experience, a necessity for any online learning environment.
Anyone who is working in and around the Roman Catholic Church in North America needs an education like this. There's no way you could get this kind of education anywhere than at a seminary.
Our online Master of Arts in Pastoral Ministry offers you the chance to continue your education in ministry and designed to provide you with the knowledge, spiritual formation, and practical skills that you need to serve the family of God in our parishes, schools, and other ministries.
By grounding yourself in the intellectual tradition of the Catholic Church, you will be able to go out into this culture and leaven it with the good news. Welcome to the podcast. My guest today is Greg Glenn, who is a co-founder of the Madeline Choir School in Salt Lake City, Utah. Founded in 1996, the Madeline School is a Roman Catholic school in the cathedral tradition, which inspires young people to become engaged scholars, effective communicators, dedicated liturgical musicians, and responsible world citizens who seek to build a civilization of justice, mercy, and love. First of all, Mr. Glenn, thank you for joining me today. I appreciate you coming on the podcast.
My pleasure.
I was speaking with a colleague of mine, Father Larry Herrera, at lunch a couple of weeks ago, and I don't know how he came on the topic, but he has known about your school for a while, and we had a really robust conversation. And as someone who is very concerned with the state of Catholic education today at all levels, your school sounded really inspiring to me. I went online and poked around and found some videos and your website, and so I really wanted to reach out to you and talk to you about your school, because it seems to me to be a sort of unique school and seems to be thriving. So I'd like to talk to you today about your school. How is it different from other Catholic schools? And then how you see this school fitting into sort of the landscape of Catholic education today. So why don't we just start with a couple of basic questions. As I mentioned a moment ago, this school is in the cathedral tradition, and it's called the Madeline Choir School. So what does that mean? What is a choir school? What is the cathedral tradition, and how is this different from other Catholic schools around the country?
Well, so first, we've definitively started this school as a school similar to the choir schools that have been attached to cathedrals in Europe for many centuries. And I've always been fascinated by the work that these schools do and the high caliber students that they produce, and just the engagement with our tradition, and then also furthering the musical life of the church. And so we specifically set out to model this choir school after those schools in England and in Germany and elsewhere. Now, mind you, bringing it out to the wild, wild west has been something of a challenge, and clearly, we're not a cookie cutter copy of things that have gone on there, but that was the intention. So we wanted to provide a school that was vibrant, that brought a fantastic education to young people. There's an old medieval writer that talked about the cathedral schools as being the envy of the angels, and we wanted that to be here. And then also to provide a source for to enhance the worship life of the Cathedral of the Madeleine. The Madeleine is a beautiful cathedral. It was fantastically renovated through the work of Monsignor Francis Mannion many years ago. And so we wanted to kind of bring that building to life with the regular musical practice at worship at Mass, and then also at the celebration of the liturgy, the hours, and things of that kind. So that was kind of the inspiration.
So I can certainly see how you would admire those schools and that tradition going back many centuries in England, as you say, in Germany. But then there's this sort of realistic the reality of translating something like that to, as you say, the sort of Wild West. What was your sort of thought process? I know this was several decades ago, so it's not fresh in your mind. But this idea of, oh, it's not just that I admire these schools, but not only do I want to do that here, but I think it can be done here and it can be successful here.
Absolutely. So I was very privileged to spend several months at Westminster Cathedral in London, just observing the choir school there. And James O'Donnell was the master of music at the time and was a tremendous host. And so I was able to attend rehearsals, talk with members of the staff, get to know kind of the ins and outs of how the school operated and its relationship with the cathedral worship life and all that kind of thing. And then I was able to visit several other choir schools there in England. And so it was interesting because I went there with the idea of asking them, you know, what structures, what pedagogical techniques create this brilliant sound, you know, from the choristers, and what is it that that makes this incredible music? And really, none of them could articulate that. And at the time, now I think they're better at it now, but at the time, that wasn't something fresh on their minds. And it dawned on me finally that it was really kind of the whole organic structure of the school. In other words, how often they perform, the repertoire that they perform, the regular performance of that repertoire, and the structure of the day, and all of those kinds of things. That's what produced this incredible institution. And so I was able to kind of, together with others, to take those ideas and boil them down a bit, as you might say, and kind of culturally adapt them to Utah. So first of all, it was very clear to us that we would offer this program for both boys and girls from the outset. And that's been a tremendous, tremendous success. And then clearly we weren't interested in having a boarding school, which many of these choir schools have. So we had to adapt the liturgical schedule so that it wasn't as vexing as might be in a choir school in London. And so it's really, we're really kind of choir school light in regards sure. to that. But however, the basics there are what we took and applied here. And, you know, we've made about 500 mistakes, but we've gotten through that and now have a pretty solid system.
So this school obviously focuses on music, but it's a sort of well-rounded education as well. And there are other schools that will focus on certain things. It's popular these days for schools to focus on the sciences, STEM, for example. But it's not simply that you emphasize music. So I'm wondering, how does this emphasis on music shape the entire culture, the entire administration, the faculty, the staff, the students, the entire life of the school? How does that focus on music shift the school to make it sort of different from other Catholic schools?
Well, I have to say that there's kind of this aspiration for excellence that you know, that is certainly part of the life of the choir and the musical life. However, that translates. So our science faculty, for example, is just fantastic, and take our students on with an honors program and things. That's very, very engaging and very advanced, and as well in the humanities, in literature and history and all of that kind of thing, and then the maths as well. So it's all of that kind of aspiration for excellence translates and is part of the entire kind of school culture. And I know that the faculty have that sense. They want their work to be on par with everything that's going on with the musical life of the school. And we never wanted to be a circus school, by the way. So in other words, that, you know, there was, the music was the main thing. And then, you know, they got, you know, a little bit of math, you know, in between performances. So we've always set out to be a strong academic institution.
Sure. You talked about the idea of translating the sort of European schools tradition to Utah, and also that you made 500 mistakes. What are some of those challenges, some of the big challenges over the years that you've had to wrestle with, and how have you overcome those?
I think one of the biggest is that people simply don't understand what a choir school is. And so they don't see immediately that the school is about the choir and about its service to the liturgy. And so that's something that people it's just foreign to people in the United States. And so that's been a difficult thing to communicate. They, you know, we keep being kind of dubbed as a Catholic school with a nice choir. And, you know, we've never really set out to be that. We've always intentionally set out to be a choir school that does that work. So that's been one of the challenges. Another has been that, you know, our student body, we have 450 students, and not all of them want to pursue excellent work in the choir or the service on the level of the main choirs. And so over the course of the years, we've developed a choral program that involves choirs that are at various levels. So if you're not a student that wants to put whole heart and soul into the choral program, you can be involved in a choir or in a non-choir program that's also focused on service and on, you know, developing skills, but at a much less intense level, things of that kind. So our two primary choirs, the Gregory Choir and the Cecilia Choir, they have a pretty rigorous schedule of service, but there are other options if you decide not to do that. So those are the couple of things that have been challenging.
Sure. So these students, obviously, with the emphasis on music, are learning skills like how to read sheet music, et cetera. But it goes deeper than that, of course. So it's not about simply giving them skills, but this education forms them. So how have you seen this emphasis on music form the way that these young children, as they grow into adulthood, how have you seen them be shaped by it?
So there are lots of transferable skills. I mean, the ability to stand up at a moment's notice in front of a large crowd and perform has all kinds of transfer. I mean, in other words, you're able to, the kids are able to do that. And so, for example, when we're on tour, we often have to walk into a cathedral or a large basilica and in moments kind of turn ourselves around and be ready to perform. And that definitely is something that the young people gain a skill from. Another is we've been told by our students is that they have excellent time management skills. They're very busy. And one of the boys said that when he went into high school and left the choir school, his time management skills went to heck. He lost them all, but he had developed them so well. So he, you know, wanted to get back to that and back to those. So those are a couple of immediate things that come to mind, and always just kind of the idea that you always kind of put your best foot forward, that you always give your best. And another one is that, you know, choirs are teams. They're not about individuals. They're about what your individual contribution to that work, which produces engaging beauty, that you're a part of that. And if you're not offering your best, then that team suffers. And so that sense of doing something together and offering your best in order to make that team be successful in whatever its endeavor is, that's another real important skill they develop.
Let's talk a bit about the music itself. As I mentioned earlier, that there's a focus on forming these young people to be dedicated liturgical musicians. I'm sure you also deal with non-liturgical music. So what kinds of music do these students receive and learn?
So the literature that's performed at Mass and at the Hours derives from the entire tradition. So we really kind of follow Sacrosanctum Concilium's lead here in terms of giving Gregorian chant a pride of place. So the chant is there as kind of a foundation. We sing the introit and communio at every Mass that we assist with, and that having that repertoire kind of built up is clearly a springboard for other things. But it also maintains that that important tradition, which is the very root not only of Christian worship music, but of Western music in general. Additionally, then we maintain, and as Sacrosanctum Concilium dictates, we preserve the great treasury of church music. So everything from, you know, Palestrina through Bruckner, through Brahms, through, you know, and more modern contemporary composers. And then we also further this tradition. So we, you know, by inspiring composers to write things now, and I couldn't be more pleased that some of our alums have gone on to pursue graduate work in composition and are now producing new works of music, of course, which we now sing as well. So we're not locked in some kind of antiquarian, museum type of thing. We're really trying to keep this tradition a vibrant source of that provides the foundation for new things that will be composed for the future. And then in terms of other literature, so the choir school, largely through the agency of my great colleague Melanie Malinka, is now the supply choir for Utah Opera, Utah Symphony. So the choristers, for example, are involved in opera productions such as La Boheme. They just recently did the Mahler Third with as Terry Fisher's farewell for the Utah Symphony. And they've done numerous performances of Carmina Burana, of course. So they do that other literature in collaboration with other professional arts organizations as well.
Most people today would probably assume that young Americans aren't interested in Palestrina or chant, that they just want to listen to pop music. Is it easy to get young people to fall in love with these styles of music? And what are the challenges of getting them to fall in love with it when they are inundated with music that the secular world wants them to listen to?
Well, I have to say that our choristers are very normal young people. And so they listen to, you know, all those more popular kinds of things, I'm sure. However, they also are kind of enchanted by this literature. And I think perhaps what does it is when it's reached a performance level where the music becomes just shatteringly beautiful. And that they catch on to that right away and engage themselves in it. We, in a concert performance this March, we did Edward Elgar's The Dream of Garancius. And that's a really deep score with, you know, challenging harmonies and really difficult choral parts. And I could sense that the students didn't immediately respond to it. You know, I mean, they were kind of, you could see that they were a little hesitant about diving into this. But then when it came time for the performance, you could see that they were all just absolutely in love with this music. And, you know, eighth grade boys, you know, you know, imagine thinking that Elgar was the greatest thing that they had ever done. And you know, so I mean, and that was the common reaction. So oftentimes the music is, they're a little hesitant as they are introduced to it. But then as it becomes part of them through rehearsal and things, then they're in love with it. So it can be done. So.
As we've been talking, the school focuses on music, but it's a Catholic school. How do you see this focus on music form these young students for Christ in a different way than those who go to Catholic schools that don't have an emphasis on music? In other words, how does this school, how does this music bring souls to Christ?
Well, I think, the beauty, I think when the beauty calls them. And I think when we recognize that this musical treasure and this musical beauty derives from our Creator God, when they acknowledge that, there's a seductive quality about beauty that you know, invites them to kind of embrace the work of the church. We're very explicit about the fact that our ministry is to proclaim Christ. And so the work that we do in the cathedral is to keep memory of Jesus and to be part of that community that makes Christ present and that engages people. So, for example, we get notes once in a while from people who one that just came to us recently was from a woman whose mother was dying in the hospital that's not too far from the cathedral. And she would stop for 5:15 mass, which the choristers sing Monday through Thursday, and attend. And she wrote a note to us just saying how it got her through that pretty horrific experience of losing her mother, that she derived such comfort and, you know, and peace from that. And I tell the kids that, you know, so that they know that they're not just, you know, flapping their gums, that they're actually making a difference in the lives of people. So, you know, just equating that with our role as missionary disciples and our need to advance God's kingdom, that we do that particularly through our musical work, bringing beauty and challenge through that, but also then through the educational aspects of the school with, you know, we have a really strong theology curriculum, retreats and things of that kind that help to form them.
Yeah, I'm sure you're well aware that Bishop Barron for many years has been talking about, you know, the transcendentals, and that for the postmodern mind, we Catholics should not engage them initially with truth and goodness, because they would sort of recoil at those Catholic claims. But the approach to start with beauty is where we should begin. And so I certainly can see how and why the beauty of the music itself can not only bring the students closer to Christ, but those who listen as well. Many Catholic educators, including myself, talk about the problem of Catholic identity in Catholic schools today. And the understanding of Catholic identity can mean various things, right? Certainly offering Mass once a week or more. So what Catholic identity means can be a sort of squishy term. But almost never is music at the front of people's minds when they talk about this challenge of Catholic identity. How would you say music is a key part or a key component of what constitutes Catholic identity at the Madeleine School?
Well, clearly through the fact that we're intentionally preserving and furthering the great treasury of Catholic music. So if you look at the repertoire lists of what we sing, they're preserving that heritage. And then by, you know, also furthering it by encouraging new composition and new work. So that would be a first thing. Our assistance with the Mass on a regular basis kind of solidifies our sense of who we are as a Catholic community. You know, we're very much in a mission territory here in Utah. And so the school kind of vacillates between about 65 and 70% Roman Catholic. And so there are those that sometimes, there are occasional parents, not very often, that kind of wonder why we are so Catholic. And I often think, you know, what have we done wrong with our branding, you know, the choir school. But the fact is that maintaining these traditions, and as you probably know as an educator, one of the other great challenges is what are the traditions that we keep and what are the traditions that we let go? You know, what are the things from the past that really need to be preserved, and what are the things that, you know, can be let go? And right after the Second Vatican Council, I think we made the mistake of just letting far too much go, and right. And that's proven to be something of a disaster. And so I think it's trying to find that balance, you know, because for example, I have I've had parents kind of say, well, why do we sing everything in Latin? And which of course the answer is we don't sing everything in Latin. We do, you know, we've got, you know, 1900 years of church music that was, you know, well, maybe I'd better qualify that to maybe 1500 years of church music written in Latin. And so obviously if we're preserving the treasury, we're going to be doing that. But we're also, you know, furthering with new things that are in the vernacular and the like. So yeah, knowing what to throw out. So for example, should kids memorize the Marian antiphons, the Regina Caeli, the Salve Regina, things like that? I would say yes, those are a great important part of our treasury, and they're beautiful prayers. and they understand them easily by, you know, learning the Latin translations. So that's the one of the tricks that we have to engage in, is knowing what to preserve and what not to.
I mentioned this school was founded in 1996, so that was several decades ago. So those students from those first years are now adults. You've already mentioned that some of them have gone on to focus their careers on education, music education, including composition. When you talk to alumni, especially the alumni from those early years who are now adults, and they tell you about how this school has shaped their lives, what do they tell you?
Well, I mean, early on, I when the school opened, and this comes from them, not from me, that they mentioned it as kind of the very best years of their educational experience. And I mean, I'm not going to say that 100% of them said that, but
sure,
a large percentage of them say that these were the best years of their educational life. And so what's interesting is that, you know, many of them are parents now. So we have a lot of alumni parents. We have alumni on our board. We have alumni teaching here at the school. We just hired, and this makes me feel a little elderly, but we just hired a middle school principal who also is a graduate of the choir school. And so there is a great kind of love for the experience that they had here, despite its ups and downs while they were here. They have gone on to be educators. They've gone on to be composers and conductors, and many of them are doing great work in various communities across the country.
We all know that Catholic education is in a crisis right now at all levels, and what would you say are some of the ways that the Madelyn School might be a model for other schools as we try to renew Catholic education? Certainly, we could use more cathedral schools. Not every Catholic school would become a cathedral school. But even, you know, whether we're talking about music specifically or not, again, it sounds like that much of the success of the program is the components that revolve around the music. So what would you say are ways that the Madelyn School can be a model for other schools?
So I'm a little hesitant about it, only because I guess I don't get out there to see the other schools.
Oh, sure. So
I'm not terribly aware of what might be happening. And I'm always concerned that we're doing our very best to minister to these young people that have been placed in our care. And so we're really focused on academics, on being academically strong. And as well, we have a strong student services department that's meeting the needs of children that have deficiencies in literacy early on and things of that kind, and also in math, so that we're, you know, bolstering them up to be successful when they reach our middle school. So those are a couple of things, you know, in the lower grades that we're doing. And certainly the music is very engaging for many families, and they want to be very involved in that. Interestingly, when we did a parental survey not too long ago as part of our accreditation process, the majority of the families choose to come to the Madelyn because of the academic strength. And music was number two on the list. So academics was number one. So, I mean, so while we're not, you know, sloughing off of anything with the musical life, we do realize that our academics are a real concern, and that we want to make sure that they're engaging, and that our teachers are well-prepared and thoughtful and doing great work in the classroom and things of that kind. So I guess attending to that quality, that quality of education. The other thing about the choir school and is that the people often remark about is the community. And so there's a great deal of community events that go on throughout the year, ways to be involved in your classroom because of the schedule of the choir and performances at, you know, with Utah Opera, and we go on a national tour every other year, and an international tour on the opposite year. Because of those things, they're very bonding experiences. We have summer camps, all that kind of thing. So parents get to know one another, and get to know the faculty and staff, get to know the students. And so that strong sense of community is really important, especially post-pandemic. You know, we're still kind of recovering from that. But that aspect of our school life, we've really worked hard to maintain and develop.
I've asked a few questions about how music and this school has shaped the lives of the students. I'm also curious, though, how would you say that this school has shaped your experience? How your experience at the Madeline School has shaped you over these years, interacting with these young students, watching them fall in love with music, watching the proverbial light go on. How has that shaped you?
Well, it's been a great blessing for me to be able to do this. When we conceived of the choir school back in 1993 and began to talk about it with parents and with Monsignor Mannion, for example, as those initial stages, most of us thought this was just something of a pipe dream, that it really wouldn't happen, but it was a nice idea. And however, then after the feasibility studies and then the approval from Archbishop Niederauer, we were all kind of stunned. And because we had an excellent group of parents and an excellent group, and then a first principal who was just an unbelievably hard worker, who really kind of laid the foundation. Her name is Elizabeth Hunt, and she really just laid the foundation academically and everything for the school that's, you know, continued to kind of be the foundation for the successes that we're experiencing today. So I guess for me, the great blessing has been to work with these incredible colleagues. I can think of 20 of them just off the top of my head, and that they've made me a better teacher, a better administrator. And then working with the young people, to see them go off and be successful, that they're keeping them, even if they're not pursuing music as a career, that their musical lives are still alive, and that the experiences they had here were formative and helpful to them in their future. So those are the, I guess, great blessings that have come my way because of this. I feel very honored to be here and working here.
You'd mentioned that, of course, Salt Lake City, we can call it sort of a mission area, well known for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, but not known for being a Catholic area, although it is known for even people who don't know much of anything about the Latter-day Saints, the Morbid Tabernacle Choir. So it's sort of known as a center of music. So what has the experience of the school and your experience being in Salt Lake City in this Latter-day Saint area, which is not a sort of hotbed for Catholicism, but it is a sort of hotbed for music.
Yeah, absolutely. So I cannot say enough about my Latter-day Saint friends and colleagues. They have been enormously supportive. And I'll mention one in particular, and that's Craig Jessup. Craig is now a professor of choral conducting up at Utah State University, but prior to that, he was the music director of the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. Immediately, he reached out to us. And in fact, in our first years of existence, he invited us to perform with the Tabernacle Choir on Music in the Spoken Word, which, by the way, was the most stressful thing I've ever been through in my life. Television is not for me. So we immediately began these collaborations, and those collaborations have gone on for 28 years. Craig has been a partner in crime musically with us, and it's just been so beneficial to the choir school. So that's one. And then, of course, the tabernacle organists are dear friends, we do a lot of collaborating with them. One of them, Andrew Unsworth, was actually the organist at the Cathedral of the Madeleine for 7 years, so he was my great colleague before he went on to serve at the tabernacle. So a lot of really, really good, wonderful relationships with those folks that have been really helpful to us.
Final question, I would like to end on a note of hope. We are a people of hope, specifically hope in the resurrection. How does the Madeline School give you hope for the future of Catholic education?
Well, I think that the how the choir serves first in the cathedral. So, for example, at funerals, at weddings, at ordinations, we have an ordination tomorrow. big celebration at Mass tomorrow, and the choristers are involved in. And the fact that they work so hard to engage and make this music beautiful and inspiring. I know that that's going to continue here. It also is attractive and invites people to be a part of our learning community. So I have a great deal of hope for the future of the school. The fact that some of my alums are coming back and now serving here, they clearly get the mission. And so I'm confident that the mission is going to go forward. And so all of those things give me great hope.
Well, it certainly gives me hope seeing schools like this, hope for Catholic education and the Catholic Church in general. So I want to thank you for coming on the podcast today, but more importantly, all the hard work. Thank you for all the hard work that you and your colleagues have done over the past couple of decades in that difficult mission territory. So thank you very much.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Our culture is in a crisis, and the solution to that crisis is the gospel message. St. John's Seminary, the seminary of the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, offers an online MA in pastoral ministry degree for anyone interested in receiving formation for ministry. This program helps students improve their knowledge of the Catholic intellectual tradition and develop practical skills for ministry. A studio with professional video, audio, and lighting equipment allows our students to have an enjoyable technological experience, a necessity for any online learning environment.
Anyone who is working in and around the Roman Catholic Church in North America needs an education like this. There's no way you could get this kind of education anywhere than at a seminary.
Our online Master of Arts in Pastoral Ministry offers you the chance to continue your education in ministry and designed to provide you with the knowledge, spiritual formation, and practical skills that you need to serve the family of God in our parishes, schools, and other ministries.
By grounding yourself in the intellectual tradition of the Catholic Church, you will be able to go out into this culture and leaven it with the good news.